Demigods and Supermen 271. The Platonic system of reasoning over the more popular Aristotelian method thus becomes self-apparent. Reasoning a posteriori is characteristic of modern thought, whereas the ancient mysteries owed their excellence largely to the a priori method. The a posteriori method inclines toward separateness, egotism, and selfishness, the a priori toward dignity, humility, and unselfishness. All systems of thought which ascribe to the parts a power equal to the whole are productive of despotism and the false usurpation of power. Tyranny is an oppression, and the limiting boundary of parts oppresses the limitlessness of wholes. From this insufficiency is born rebellion, for that which is unduly bounded bursts its bonds and escapes into an area sufficient for its expression. When inferiors are ruled by superiors, order reigns, but when superiors are ruled by inferiors, chaos prevails. If man is ruled by the laws of the universe, he is justly dealt with, but if the universe were subjected to the laws of men, sufficiency would be oppressed by insufficiency. When particulars are ruled by generals, rational order is the product, but when generals are ruled by particulars, the despotism of Aristotelianity destroys all rational congruity. When the individual essays the philosophic life, it is first necessary that the mind be trained to think in round terms. For roundness partakes of the nature of wholeness, because the circle or sphere, like wholeness, is without beginning or end. To think in round terms may be interpreted to mean keeping the mentality upon the level of greatest inclusiveness, ever striving to attain fuller inclusiveness, since perfect inclusiveness alone qualifies the intellect to descend to the contemplation of parts. For example, when thinking of religion, do not think of Mohammedans, Brahmins, or Christians, but think of religion as the universal adoration of creative principles common to all mankind, and found in a rudimentary form even among the higher animals, such as the anthropoid ape. Having first established the universality of veneration, we have founded our comprehension upon the wholeness of the subject. From this point we may then rationally descend to 272 lectures on ancient philosophy, the consideration of religions, thereby escaping the pitfall of intolerance resulting from basing the study of religion upon a religion. When viewed from the exalted level of wholeness, such issues as the possible priority of the Presbyterians over the Methodists not only become inconsequential, but retire beyond the vanishing point of philosophic concern. Yet men who have termed themselves rational, who have been entrusted by their communities with positions of importance and the administration of justice, have waged bloody warfare and unreasonable persecution over such trivialities. Competitiveness is thus demonstrated to be natural to parts. Hence the mind that thinks in terms of parts makes continual comparison between them, whereas the highly evolved intellect, recognizing that cooperation through which the parts are caused to form the whole, thinks and lives in terms of tolerance and magnanimity. Philosophic discipline therefore requires that the intellect be rationalized through familiarity with unities, and permitted to express its natural amity toward them, being itself a wholeness. The rationality has an affinity for wholeness, and rejoices in its contemplation. This rational desire for completeness is opposed, however, by the irrationality of the animal soul, limited to the plane of sense and beholding only diversity. The principle of unity is inconceivable to the animal soul because its nature and perception function in terms of isolated individualism. Stimulated by philosophic discipline, the rational faculties are caused to assert their intrinsic preference, thereby inclining the entire mental organism toward recognition of the supremacy of poles. Having thus established its preference, the mind gradually comes instinctively to function in harmony therewith. The result is mental benevolence, which manifests in the outer life as that nobility of temperament which irresistibly attracts and is concordant with the subconscious unity existent in all human nature. The nobility of the inclusive intellect is undeniable, and opposition to its conclusions is usually based upon cupidity or egotism, for it can never be rationally opposed. Another point of major importance is that a mind established upon wholes is never forced to reconstruct its attitudes. Demigods and Supermen 273. Toward particulars, for these attitudes are continually held in suspension. As the mind increases in its knowledge of particulars, it simply pours them into the capacious wholeness, which is always sufficient to include the nature of the parts. As a result, it is impossible to outgrow a doctrine or be forced to reconstruct it, for the mind, moving in certainties, builds in from universals and does not arrive at particulars until it is capable of recognizing and organizing their diversity. In the preceding outline, the processes of inductive and deductive reasoning may appear to be hopelessly confused. Here again, it must be realized that reason itself is also a wholeness, of which induction and deduction are parts. Hence, as Confucius noted, the positive and negative are never found to be totally isolated, so induction always partakes to some degree of deduction, while deduction, inclining toward induction, finds its opposite essential to the philosophic unity. Induction, which is the pure Socratic method while it reasons from particulars to generals, does so with the definite purpose of establishing generals. It is possible for the mind to ponder upon particulars without emphasizing the quest of wholeness. In fact, particulars may be traced toward their own cause without the realization of wholeness being established, for in this case particulars merge into particulars instead of generals, and the entire universe continues to be regarded as a mass of particulars rather than a wholeness. True induction, however, is the quest of wholeness through particulars, the decision to establish the rational code in the sense of generals. Upon reaching this state, the mind has realized the true end of the Socratic process or the Aristotelian mode. On the other hand, having established rationality in generals, the mind assumes the Platonic mode and begins to reason toward particulars. This procedure ultimately results in the establishment of consciousness at a point of equilibrium, midway between induction and deduction, where both are shown to be contributing factors in the unfoldment of the process of rational thinking. 274 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Demigods and Supermen 275. The natural flow of existence is from the prior to the subsequent, or from the cause to its effect. Pythagoras, however, recommended the retrospective mode whereby the subsequent is caused to flow back into priority. The mental reactions caused by these two processes are far-reaching. To establish a cause through its effect awakens a reaction wholly different from that created by the picture of a cause flowing into its effect. The former is an impulse far more definite than the latter, due possibly to the unnatural order which emphasizes the intensity of the elements involved. The flow of cause into effect is so common as to become monotonous. The mental faculties, therefore, become oblivious to the drone of the natural or normal sequence. When, however, the process is reversed, the mental faculties are startled into activity by the unfamiliar and consequently discordant note. Retrospection is an inductive procedure which, by revealing the effect before its cause, emphasizes the enormity of Kant's quince that can be suspended from the mode of cause. The effect of such revelation is to overawe the intellect with the sense of responsibility. It demonstrates that though man has a certain province for the exercise of despotic agency, he is powerless to control the destiny of his fabrications or determine with certitude the ends at which his beginnings shall arrive. Man's sphere of influence is as far-reaching as creation, and what we first agitate diverges to the shores of eternity like the ripples from a stone thrown upon the surface of some placid lake. That which we have thus enlivened with our own potentially ties we can never overtake until at last we mingle with it in the absolute. The living are ruled by the dead, the present is ruled by the past, and, as Omar Khayyam says, that which the first man wrote, the last man shall read. Under the mouldering head stone in some obscure churchyard may rot the mortal remains of some petty despot whose royal edicts still survive to afflict unborn generations with their absurdities. Huge enterprises may go awry, yes, empires perish through the insidious consequences of a few hastily spoken words or a single irrational. 276 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Act. Retrospection warns men so to regulate their thoughts and actions that the afterglow of their achievements shall not be tinted with a lurid or unnatural hue. Though man loses control over the seeds of action which he has sown in the fields of space, he is forever the victim of his self-generated consequences. Those careless in thought or deed will sometime curse the providence that heaps upon them the unwelcome fruitage of their own folly and forces them to live in tolerance with their own progeny. Elsewhere are described, pp. 52, 53, the orders of the gods, demigods, supermen, and mortals, descending from his spirit. UAL state, man was established in irrationality, a condition from which he seeks to escape by inclining himself toward superior natures and ascending to the seat of rationality. The gods differ from man in that their realization of wholeness or unity is intrinsic, and their consciousness is incapable of descending to terms of diversity. They are consequently unable to exist, think, or feel in terms of particulars, since by virtue of their establishment in wholeness they are without the appreciation of parts. A simple illustration of this attitude is man himself, who finds it difficult to realize the existence of individuality within his own nature. He cannot conceive of independent cellular or organic function within his own body. He may affirm his intellectual belief in the individuality of parts, but his consciousness does not supply him with any definite recessions along this line. As man, the corporeal unit is incapable of descending into and coming en rapport with the consciousness of a single cell of his own body, so the gods or units of spiritual consciousness have no rational perception of the diversity suspended from their own natures. When we realize the gods to be wholes or unities, we can better comprehend why they abide in immortality and are not subject to dissolution. The dignity of gods over men is equal to the superior dignity of wholes over parts. As wholes can never be less than wholes, it is evident that the gods cannot descend to men, but as parts are capable of being merged into wholes, so man is capable of ascending into the presence of the gods.